Hi. All right, so who here is first time in Orlando? First time? All right, great. How do I switch to the PowerPoint, please? All right, I think we're good. Great. So I came to Orlando about 2 years ago. It was for the internal company meeting. And I was really blown away with the kind of attractions that we have here. The biggest problem that I faced was there's so many attractions out here and I don't have enough time to cover them all. Especially because I come from India and we don't get to see these huge attractions out there. And when I come here, I would love to go into all these places and explore, but I don't have enough time, or rather, there are problems like I do not know which attractions is close to me and all those kind of things. So when I was sitting on a plane, I was thinking, like, I have to build a demo for this session for sure. Why don't I solve two problems? One is build the demo, as well as I also, solve a problem that what are the attractions nearby, and I could check into those places, right? So I thought I would build the app. So my name is Nish, and I'm a developer evangelist at Xamarin. So what we're going to look at today is the app idea. This is the demo. So it is going to list all the attractions close to my location, looking at my location. And then it can give you directions. It can do geofencing. Now, this is another problem that I saw previously, is when I have my colleagues and we go out for dinner, we come back from dinner and I talk about one of the attractions and it's like, hey, that was just by the same place where we went. And I was like, oh man, I didn't even know that. Why didn't you mention at that time, right? So I thought geofencing is a great idea because the moment you are in close proximity to that attraction, why doesn't my app notify me automatically and tell me there is an attraction close by? You guys know geofencing? Yeah, you have a fair idea, right? So I could enable geofencing too. So I did that. I enabled that onto my app as well. And then I also built check-ins so that I can keep track of the places that I go. So what you're going to see is building this app, also covering the basic features of Android development. For some reason, my clicker is not working. OK, so basic features of Android development. The way I'm going to start is do a file new Android project and show you some of the Android fundamentals, and then go and explain you about the how does it whole thing work? Why is Xamarin Android development a complete native development? We go into those details, and then also look at the Android Marshmallow features. All right? All right, let's do that. So I need to plug in this. Right, so that's my Xamarin Studio. I'm going to start with file new solution, and I have an Android app. So you can build a Xamarin Forms app, or an iOS app, or a tvOS app, but now we are going to build the Android app. And within Android, you can see that you can also build a Wear app. So if you want to build an Android Wear, you're free to do that too. So I'm going to go select a new and say, hello Android dev, and say next. And say create this application. So this is going to create my application. By the way, whatever I'm showing you right now, it's going to work on Xamarin Studio as well as on Visual Studio. So if you are a Visual Studio user on Windows, you're free to use that. You don't have to use Xamarin Studio. So let's start off with the basics. First thing that you need to understand is go to the options of the project and understand this minimum Android version and the target Android version. You guys know Android has different API levels, right? You have AB, Cupcake, Donut, Eclair, Froyo, Gingerbread, Honeycomb, Ice Cream Sandwich, Jelly Bean, Kit Kat, Lollipop, and now we are talking about Marshmallow, right? So you have to be very clear on what Android you want to support. First thing, you can go to the general settings over here and set the target framework. Now, when you set this target framework, you can see that there are not many target frameworks out there. And that is because the SDK has not been installed, right? So here's the thing. When you set the target framework, This is at the compile time. So that means you need the SDKs for compiling it. So to know that, you can go into the Android SDK Manager. I'm just going to take off from here and show you this. There's Android SDK Manager out here. And you need to install a particular SDK platform for it to be enabled there. So make sure you have that. And I will always suggest you to have the latest one and always target the latest one. You can always go and specify the minimum Android version that you want to work with. And that check happens during the runtime. So if I go to the options, onto the Android application, there you go. You have the target Android version and also the minimum Android version. So here, you're free to set that, hey, my features have to support even the maybe Froyo or Gingerbread or Honeycomb, right? The previous versions, you can do that too. So some important settings there, keep that in mind. And then let's start off with understanding the app development in Android. The way in Android it works is we have activities, okay? Activities are basically loosely coupled. When I say that, you always, whenever you see a screen on Android, that has an activity, and that activity is inflating a view, right? So in my case here, I have a main activity right over here, and I have also set the main launcher equals to true. I told you that, you know, the activities are loosely coupled. So in my case, I'll have to specify that this is my main activity, so my Android system can inflate this particular view when it launches up, right? So I have this onCreate method. I can also override a few other methods like onResume and other things like lifecycle methods. So we're not going to go into those details right now. Pay attention to this. There's something called a setContentView, and it says resource.layout.main. Now, what is that? If you go into the resources folder, within the layout, you will have something called as main.xml. This is technically the UI of your Android. So if you go into the details, we have this beautiful Android designer out there. So on the left, you have this toolbox, and you can technically drag and drop any control from your left and drag it to the surface. You guys can all see? It's fine, right? All right, when I click on a particular button, on the right side, you have the properties. You can go and change the properties of this settings. So for example, if I want to change the background color, I can go and do that. See that? It's all, what's happening? It's giving me some extra stuff. All right. So I can go and set those colors if I wish to. So you see that? You can go and design this, but not the best way to design it. Oh my God. Was this happening earlier? Okay, that's weird. It's fine, actually. Let's see. Should I change to 720p, maybe? It's okay? Okay. Right, so you can go and change these designs out here. And what you would see is in the source file, it is generating an XML file. Now, these XML files are completely interdependent. When I say this, I'm also talking about if you have a Java application, right? It has XML files. You can technically reuse those XML files that you used in your Android application Java and bring it to C#. So it's not something that we are generating anything extra over here. It is the same XML file layout that has been set, even from Xamarin Studio or Visual Studio. So whatever we set the background tint color, see, it's all set over here. So it's going to be, it's pretty easy to do that. And now in the main activity, that's what we do. We set, we inflate this view, and then if you want to work on the UI elements there, you use this helper method called findViewById and say that you want a button, and then you can provide, let's say, a button click. So now if you want to, now all your apps, it's not always just one view, right? You'll have multiple views. So you may have to navigate to a different view. So how do you navigate to a different view? You can create a new activity. You always need an activity, so don't forget that. So you can create a new activity. For example, let's say I can call this a second activity. And remember, you need a base class, which is the activity in this case. And now I can go and override onCreateView or onCreate method. out here, let's say, let's do this, great view. And now I can move to the second activity from this button click. So instead of doing this logic, I can change to this. I use something called a start activity, and I can specify a type of the second activity. So this way, on the button click, I'm moving into another activity, which is going to, you need to write the code for inflating your view. So you need to define a view inside your layout, design that, and then you can set it back. So this way, you'll have two pages. So on click of a button, you can move to the next page, right? So now let me show you my app real quick. So I have this Nexus 6P device over here. So this is the app. So you can see that the nearby attractions out here. And this is a list view, right? Right now I showed you an activity. In activity, I added a list view, and it is basically the list of all the details that is coming up from the nearby attractions. So I can click on this. Now I'm navigating to a new view. I've added some animations to it so that when you move from one activity to another activity, it gives a nice transition. So I can check in if I wish to. I mean, this text is not helpful, but anyways, you get the point, right? Also, I can get directions. So I have this beautiful floating action button. I can click on that, and there you go. It'll tell me where exactly this attraction is. And what it did is, instead of baking in a directions app within my app, I'm actually handing over this control to the Google Maps, because I know there's already a Maps app, so I don't have to do this. So I just handed it over to that, and you can just say, I want to drive to that location, then you can move on, right? So this is a very simple one. And I also have a check-ins feature, so when I click on the check-in button, I will have this check-ins out here, and all the check-ins are listed. I mean, these are the places that I went to, so I have checked into those places. So I can modify these things, like what date and time I checked in and all those kind of things. All right, so one more thing we talked about is, how do we have geofencing done, right? So geofencing, the way it works is, the moment you define a radius of the place that where you want to track, and the moment you enter into that radius, it automatically will notify you, all right? In this case, since I'm not anywhere closer to the radius, so what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna do a test notification. So you can see that when I do a test notification, it automatically gives me a notification on my screen, and I can click on that, and just notice is when I click on that, it takes me directly to that page, right? And it gives me the directions. And I can check in here, I can get directions, all those kind of things. Looks cool? All right. Let me switch back. So what we're going to do is we're going to go into these details as well. Everything that I showed you today, this thing is open source. So you can go download this code. You can use that code. I mean, it's more very close to how a production app should look like. So you can take that source code and use it in your production app if you wish to. All right, so how does this whole thing work? You saw me do a lot of things. How many of you are .NET developers here? Okay, you're all .NET developers. Now, how did you find this Android development? I showed about activities, resources, right? It's totally new, right? Now, how do we do this? This is exactly how a Java developer does in Android too. So what we do is, you have your .NET and C#, whatever you write, we also have bindings to the jar files below. So you get the one-to-one mapping of the libraries, what Java developers uses in C#. Now together, that's packaged into an APK file, and it is finally deployed into your device. When you deploy into a device, now you know that in Android, you have Dalvik that's running there, right? In case of our app, it's gonna be the Mono which is gonna run this application. So you have the Mono, you have the just-in-time, it is gonna compile the IL at the runtime, and it's gonna, your app is gonna work. Now that's why it's completely native, so you give the native performance. All right, any questions? Cool. So now let's go into the Marshmallow features. How many of you have Marshmallow already? Wow, so you came into the right talk. So, some of the main features that I'm going to, there's a ton of improvements in Marshmallow, but I want to cover the main ones, okay? One is runtime permissions. Okay, we will look at authentication. They have added beautiful support to fingerprint recognition. That's the reason why I got this phone, so that I can show you the fingerprint recognition. And we'll look at voice interactions, direct share. Why is my clicker behaving? Yeah, direct share, power saving optimization, and few material design updates that came in. First thing, how many of you have seen this? Since you're using Marshmallow, you've already seen that, right? How was this in the past? How was the permissions handled in the past? Do you know? Yeah, so this way. So when you install this application, the user is bombarded with this huge screen saying, hey, I want all these permissions, right? That's not the right way to do it, because imagine if I'm installing a Notes application, right? It's asking me for a microphone permission, and I have no idea why should a Notes application need a microphone permission, right? It doesn't make any sense. So it's important to ask permission as per the context. So when you can have a Notes application with a microphone icon there, when the user clicks on it, ask for the permission. So ask at the right time. Don't ask all, you know, at the beginning of it. So you get the screen. So the user gets this screen which says, allow this app to, you know, access this location. So in my case, I'm doing the geofencing, so as well as finding the nearest locations. So I will have to access, I'll have to have the access to the GPS or the location services. So for me, what I do is the moment the app starts, I ask the user, hey, give me the permission. But one thing that I do not do is I do not crash the app if they do not give the permission. So, okay, I need to be here, I guess. Okay, so one thing I did not do is I did not crash. So if the user denies this, I'm fine with it. All that is going to happen there is on the screen, it would not show the nearest location sorted by the distance. So it's just going to say, okay, these are the attractions nearby. That's it. Now, one thing you have to understand, users have the ability to revoke the permission. So when you revoke, you need to do something. We'll look at that too. Now, first thing first, you need to request permission. How do you request permission? You need to first check whether this find location permission has been granted. So that's the thing, context:compat.check self-permission. So that will tell whether the permission was granted already. Now, this code has to be checked every time. And the reason for that is users can always go and revoke the permission from their settings. So you need to check for this always. If this is successful, then if I'm going to check if this permission is granted, if it's not granted, I'm going to ask, request the permission. So now that pop-up comes up and asks, like, do you want this app to be given this permission, right? So that's the line of code that does that. The next thing is, once the permission is given, you will be your callback gets fired, which is the on-request permission result. So you will get back this information on this method saying whether you got the permission or you did not get the permission. So you have to act accordingly. Now, as I mentioned before, users can always go and revoke the permission, all right? So when the user revokes the permission, it's important to explain why you need that permission. So you should say, request permission rationale, and then show permission snack bar. Okay, I'll explain this. This is what is going to be output. What you see on the bottom is a snack bar. It's a new material design update. So it's a lightweight thing, so it just pops up, and users can slide it, which is like, I'm declining this. Or you can provide an action button there saying that, hey, let's do it. So the text is, allow this app to use your location to show distance to attractions. So I'm definitely saying, hey, the reason why I need this permission is because I want to show the distance to your attractions. And I say, there's an action button, so let's do it. So now it can be provoked again. So now let's look at this. So what I'm going to do right now is, now you see on this is an overlay where you can see 1.2. All right, so do you see this SeaWorld Orlando, which has 1.2 miles, then Universal Orlando, 3.1 miles, right? That's because the permission has been granted. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to uninstall this app. let's uninstall this. And we'll recompile this and deploy it again. Sure. You for sure have to put it in the manifest. That is compulsory, because also there is a backward compatibility you need to. Even then, you need to specify in the manifest. Okay, it's still, let's see. Okay, deployment completed, and there is a, oh, you know what, I'm running it wrong. Okay, let's do this. So all I'm doing is I'm just redeploying this whole thing. Let's see. Any other questions? No? All right, it's done. So you see that? The first thing it says is allow this thing to have the access to location. And I can say I can deny it. Right? Now you don't see the miles anymore. I don't crash the app. I just do not show the distance. Now, when I come back to this app again, let's say I remove that, and then I come back to this app again, it is now it's going to give me this snack bar and say, hey, allow this, because it needs the permission. And I can do that again. All right, let's, because this, the problem with the snack bar is it stays for a while and then just goes. So let's say click on let's do it, and now you see that. It gives me that permission box again. And you also have this option called never ask again. So users can decide to check on that box. So you better handle it in a nicer way. So now I'm going to say allow permissions, and your app is going to display all the other stuff, right? All right, so the way it is, I think I showed the code. Now, next thing that I want to cover is the authentication. Now, Android Marshmallow comes with two authentication. One is the two new types of authentication. One is the fingerprint authentication, and the second one is the confirm credential. Now, when you want to use fingerprint authentication, first thing to define is in your manifest file, you have to say you need the use fingerprint. And also, you will be using something called as Fingerprint Manager, which is from the new fingerprint print APIs. You will get the crypto keys, which are actually stored in the key store, so that you know no one can hack into it. And always, if you're doing a fingerprint, it is important to show the user that you're doing that. So that's why you need to set that icon there. You need to show them that you're trying to access the fingerprint of the user. And every time, this is authenticated every time. It's not like, it can be authenticated once, and you can assume that you have the authentication already, so let's do this. You have to authenticate it all the time. And the best example to do this is in-app purchases. For example, if you are shipping a music app, and you want the users to buy the music that's been sold in your app, you can use in-app purchases, so they can use the fingerprint and then complete the purchase, use a credit card, right? Now, I was thinking, what's the best way to show the fingerprint authentication in my app? And I came up with this idea that why don't we do fingerprint authentication for check-in, right? So I can go into the details of this, and I can click on check-in here, and now it can say, hey, oh, sorry. So what I was doing is I was clicking on the check-in button here, and it gives me this new dialog that says touch to check-in, and I can just put my finger there, and then there you go. Check-in is successful. So you want to try this again. I'm putting a wrong finger, and it says it's not recognized. So it's very easy to integrate it. So once you go into the check-in, you will have that check-in that I recently did. It's very easy to do that. So let me just quickly show you in the app. So I have this fingerprint app out here, and I have something called as Fingerprint UI Helper, where I have two things. One is starting to listening to the fingerprint, and stopping on authentication, I do something. Let me just, on authentication succeeded, then I, do the rest of the things, like check in to the user, right? It's very simple. So the best place to use it, I don't know if check-in is a great way, but the best place to use it is for your in-app purchases, right? And the other improvement in Marshmallow is confirm credentials. Well, you can use this feature for in-store purchases. For example, maybe I'm walking into Walmart or Target, and I'm already using my phone, and I reach to the POS, and I'm completing the purchase using the NFC transaction. At that point, I can actually give a confirm credential of my, which is nothing but your device lock screen, and you can validate that and complete the purchase, right? That's the best place that you can use it. The reason for that is if the user is already using the phone, right, you don't have to bring the device lock screen again. So let's say if he has been used in less than 1 minute, right, if he has unlocked it within less than 1 minute, you don't have to authenticate it again because it's already taken care. So imagine I'm just using the phone, using the text message, and I'm just walking in, and it just pops up the new screen. It doesn't look nice. So if I've unlocked it previously in a shorter time, just go ahead and authenticate it. So you have all those functionalities out there. So it utilizes the device lock screen and best for in-store purchases. All right, so next up, are you guys using this OK Google? This new nice feature that it comes on the Android, right? Probably in the future, you can just say on your watch, okay, Google, get my car out of the garage. It could be a Google Auto car, which is driving out of your garage automatically, possible. But I'll tell you what is possible today is using the voice actions that Google helps gives you to build. So voice interaction is something like this. I can tell Google, okay, Google, take a picture, and it can say, which camera would you like to use? And you can say front. And it says, say cheese, and you say cheese, and it automatically takes a photo. Now, what you see here, it's not just an action. It's not telling you to just take a picture, but there is a conversation between the robot and you, right? So that can be built into your app. You can build an interesting conversation into this app. I think it's better I stay here. And the way you do is you can extend the system voice action, which in this case is the media action. That's the taking a picture is a media action. Or you can write a custom action. Now, working with custom actions is going to be a little difficult because you'll have to work with Google then and to bring the custom actions. Now, last evening when I went to the Google page, they said that we are no more accepting any custom action requests right now, but I don't know why. If you're something like Uber or taxi, like you can just say book a cab, that's a custom action. These are system actions because it's asking you to take a media picture or you want to play a music, stop a music, right? Pause a music. Those are system actions. So you can extend the system voice actions. So basically you're interacting with the users and giving a nice experience in your app. The way you have to do that is in your activity, whichever activity is handling this particular request, this is the voice interaction request, you have to remember to give the intent to category voice. That's how your app gets called or your activity gets called when that particular voice action gets triggered. In this case, I'm doing the action image capture. So when that, let's say, take a picture, it calls this activity because you have enabled the category voice too. Now, you get a callback here. So what you need to write is voiceinteractor.pickOptionRequest. Within that, you will be overriding this method called onOptionResult, and that is what gets triggered, and that's the point you go and take a picture, right? Now, how do you build this conversation? So this is how you do that. First thing is, if I'm not interacting with the voice interaction, I can just say return, so I'm not going to build any of these things, right? Because on your regular basis, on your, let's say, onResume function, it can be called naturally by moving from one screen to another screen. But onResume can be called even by the voice interaction. So I'm just making sure that if this call had come in through voice interaction, then I want to enable a voice interaction request with a prompt saying, say cheese. You can also see a couple of more things, like you can say, add synonyms to it. So maybe not everybody is interested in saying cheese, right? I can say okay or ready or something like that. So you can add synonyms there. So the best part about this is, as a developer, you don't have to do the speech recognition. It's all done for you. You're just telling Google with that text that you're expecting there. You put in that thing, and then you can say voiceinteractor.submit request. Everything else is taken care of. All right, going back to the Marshmallow features, another interesting feature is a direct share. Now, how many of you share pictures online, like Facebook, Twitter? Yes. Imagine if you are going into a photo gallery and you want to share the picture to a friend of yours on Facebook. What's the best way to do it? You can go into the photo gallery, or you can go into your Messenger, go to the contacts, and say, attach an image, right? And then go select the image that you want to share and say, send. But what if there's an easier way? That's what is direct share all about. In direct share, what happens is you can, when someone tries to share, you can directly pop up the contacts of the person where you can directly share the text or image to. So instead of just showing your app there, it's all your contents, contacts from your app that's shown there. Maybe the best way, obviously you cannot, if you have 1,000 contacts, it's not the right way to pop up the 1,000 contacts there, right? The best way to do that is find all the people who this person has been interacting more recently, right? Pick up those contacts and show them. So this, all these things gives you a better user experience on the platform. So it's an easy way to share things. It can launch a specific activity. And one of the examples is, as I mentioned, which is sharing the image directly to a specific friend or community. Another new feature in the Android is Android Marshmallow is the power optimization feature. How many of you who have upgraded to Marshmallow find your battery is a lot better? Your battery optimization is a lot better? And the reason for that is they introduced something called as the doze mode. So if your phone is not in your pocket, that is, there's no movement at all, you kept it on a table, like say when you're going to sleep, you're keeping it somewhere else, right? Then automatically, when there is an activity, the Android system, what it does is it automatically delays all your background processes. It does not let you execute any of the background processes, and it just queued up. It's not killing it, but it's pausing it, and it's queued up for a later time. That way, your every services consume less battery. So it's a smart way of detecting the app inactivity, app standby, and only allowing the power to be consumed. Now, let's say there are situations where you have high priority messages, right? For example, let's say Twitter. If someone is following you on Twitter, that's not a great, that's not a high priority message that needs to be popped up immediately. But if someone is direct messaging you, that's a high priority thing. So Android allows you to, even in the doze mode, it allows you to, you know, let your app function with this kind of messaging. So if there is a high priority message, you can directly bump in. But that does not mean that you can specify every message of yours as a high priority message. So just because your app has to work, right? So that's a best practice is to find the high priority message, give them that space. Right, with that, a few material design updates. I would encourage you to go attend this talk on material design. I think today it's end of the day, I guess. Jeremy and James is going to cover this all, but just a brief update. There is updates on navigation view. These are totally new. Navigation view, that's the drawer menu that you generally see on all your Google apps. That is baked in, so you can use that. You can use the snack bar, which you saw in the app. That's a pop-up. A very interesting one, and it's not blocking the screen. It just comes there and just goes away. And a floating action button. Floating action button is like a primary button in your app. Like, what is the most primary thing that you want to do in your app? In my case, it was getting the users with the directions. So that was my primary button. So I gave a floating action button. And floating action button works in conjunction with the coordinator layout. So it's important to know that, because you have to specify a coordinator layout before you do the floating action button. All right, so most sessions, attend the Google Play services, I think today at 4:30, more about Android development. Everyone can create beautiful apps with Material Design. That's the talk I was talking about, 5:30. And tomorrow, Craig Dunn is doing a talk on iOS platform, if you guys are interested in knowing the basics of iOS development and what are the new features in introduction, sorry, what are the new features in 9, you can go attend the talk tomorrow at 11:30. Do you guys know what is the latest version of Android? N, yeah. We do not know exactly what N is going to be, but there are so many speculations about it. But we support N, and it's in the preview mode. So you can download the previews. There's beautiful support for multi-window. Then there's enhancement for notification and notification enhancements, and also the data saver. So if you are interested in checking out N, just go and try this out. We announced it, I think, a week ago. I don't remember. Yeah. So that's about it. And if you have any questions, we can take the rest of the time. I have, I think, 10 minutes. We can discuss something on Android if you could. Yeah. Well, I could do the. That's a great point. I can use the plugin if I were to write a cross-platform application. But in my case, I was just writing the Android application, so I just did not use it. But it's a great point. Just go and use the cross-platform plugin so that when you port it to the iOS, you can easily do that. You can reuse most of the things. But what I haven't shown you, I think it's a good time to do that, is this thing. The way I've architected this whole thing. So you see this, there's an Android project, a portable project, and a Droid shared project. The way I have architected this is all the functionalities related to my Android app goes into this Android project. Okay, there is ton of functionalities which has been used. If you look at the list, I've used fragments, I've used recycle views, and all those kind of things. And if you look at the Droid shared, when I was building this app, I had also the Android Wear app in mind. So I wanted to write a Wear app too, not just using the phone, but use the watch. Now, when I had to use this watch, technically there are a lot of functionalities that I've been using in the app that needs to be available in the Wear app too. So that's why I have a Droid shared project which can be easily shared between Wear as well as my native app. But I also have a portable library. Now, you saw the check-ins list. The check-ins, when I said there was a list, and when I was exiting the app and coming back, the check-ins list remained there. That's because I'm saving it to a SQLite repository. And all this code related to that, the SQLite repository, is actually written inside the portable class libraries right here. So I have the data manager, the SQLite provider, and things. And the best part about this is I can take this whole library and share it with my iOS or UWP or WPF or anything, any applications for that matter. So that's a PCL. So no platform-specific code, everything is a .NET code, and in real application, you can add a ton of business logic here, right? Maybe you're connecting to Azure backend. That Azure backend can be completely there. In my case, I was just using models, and I was using the LatLang objects of Google. That's the reason why I did not put the model there, but in reality, you would have the model in the portable class libraries. Any other question? Good? All right, so I'm done. Thank you very much for joining.